Well, I don't know if Mo chose that last song because it would be a fitting song to begin our lesson tonight. But I liked the third verse in particular. It sort of talks about the wonderful fellowship we share, the love among us as brothers and sisters, and what a great atmosphere that creates. But when he said, when free from envy, scorn, and pride, our wishes all above, each can his brother's failings hide and show a brother's love. That's just a neat thought as we, you know, what a wonderful atmosphere we have to get to be with one another, and how different it is, how radically different it is from what you have to be in every day. And I always hold my brethren who have to work in the world in high esteem because of the kind of atmosphere, as maybe we heard even some in our Bible class this morning, that they have to endure and be different in the midst of that, how hard that is. I remember when I did work in a microbiology lab for a number of years, and I can just remember sitting at a break room table, and it wasn't just the ladies, but they would be there and might say, did you hear what so-and-so did? And then they would start, and then somebody would say, and I don't know if this is true or not, don't hold me to it, but I understand that. You would hear this and you'd feel uncomfortable, and you, what am I going to do? And you may know some of that. And would you participate, or would you get up and leave the room, or would you say, hey, you know, I don't know if that person was sitting here tonight, right now, if they'd really want us talking about them like that. You know that atmosphere. It's so common. It just makes you feel dirty. And there's a proverb about that that I wanted to begin with. That's why being in an atmosphere like this is so refreshing. It's such a break from the wickedness of the world. But there's a proverb that I wanted you to see in Proverbs chapter 25, verse 18, where he says, like a club and a sword and a sharp arrow is a man who bears false witness against his neighbor. You know, I don't know, I would never hit somebody with a club, and I wouldn't cut them with a sword, and I wouldn't shoot them with an arrow. And yet, how many times maybe I've been guilty of bearing false witness against a neighbor? And when I do that, it hurts a lot worse than that club or that arrow or that sword. The word false witness in the Bible is a word that means slander. And slander is one of the most serious offenses in the Bible. Look in chapter 10 of Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 10. In verse 18 and 19, he says that he who conceals hatred has lying lips, and he who spreads slander is a fool. When there are many words, transgression is unavoidable, but he who restrains his lips is wise. I think that those two verses are linked together. I usually memorize verse 19, but I forget that 18 probably is connected to that. And 2 Timothy 3 and verse 3 says, realize this, that in the last days difficult times would come, for men will be lovers of their self, unloving, irreconcilable, and malicious gossips without self-control. And he goes on, and he wasn't even talking about the world. He was talking about in churches, that would be the nature of some generations of people who call themselves the Lord's people. So, I imagine any of us, all of us would say, I would never, ever slander somebody. And if you think of this as what I'm talking about as an intentional falsehood, then I doubt any one of us would ever do that. You know, nobody would say, I would deliberately decide to slander somebody. But some people do. Sometimes people do. I mean, Potiphar's wife did. Joseph, remember when she was tried to seduce him, and he ran out of the room leaving his coat, and she said that he tried to force her, and it was a lie, and she knew it, and it was designed to hurt him, and it did. Landed him in prison for 2 years. And now, we wouldn't do that, but there are other ways that we can slander and bear false witness against people, and I want us to think about those for a few minutes tonight. That would help us to be very guarded with our tongues, very careful in what we say. We can tell a partial truth. That can be slander. We were just talking about Joseph. Do you remember when Joseph's brothers sold him to Potiphar down in the in Egypt? And if they had told the truth about what they had done, two things would have happened. First of all, they'd probably been punished for it. And second of all, they'd probably been sent to Egypt to go and get him and bring him back. But they wanted him away from their family, so they had his coat, they dipped it in blood. This is Genesis chapter 37. And they asked his father the question. They said, "Do you know who this coat belongs to?" And he knew, of course. And he knew that he had sent Joseph to find out about his brothers and how they were doing. And immediately he came to the conclusion that his son had been killed. So it went something like this. Chapter 37, verse 32 through 34. They sent the varicolored coat and brought it to their father and said, "We found this. Please examine it to see whether it is your son's tunic or not." And he examined it and he said, "It is my son's tunic. A wild beast has devoured him. Joseph has surely been torn to pieces." And so Jacob tore his clothes, put on sackcloth, and mourned for his son for many days. Well, they didn't tell a lie, but they did bear false witness that destroyed the hope of Joseph being rescued by his father. How'd they do that? By not telling all the truth. They only told part of the truth. I remember going to work with a group years ago, and this group had split off from another church, and of course the first thing they wanted to do was explain to me and Monica what happened, and they recounted a lot of these facts, and by the time it was over, I was pretty aggravated with this other group. You know, I thought, man, can't believe they did that. So we agreed to work with them, and it wasn't too terribly long that there weren't some more facts that sort of trickled in, and they never said that anything didn't happen, but it gave a little bit fuller picture, and all of a sudden the brethren changed the picture a little bit. We can bear false witness by only telling a partial truth, and that's so easy to do. You know, are you ever guilty of passing on news about somebody? Everything's true, but you leave out a significant detail and make what would be a true witness a false witness and make it into slander. Be careful about that. Another way we can do that is by using loaded words. In Matthew chapter 11, look over there. Matthew chapter 11 is a story about when John the Baptist, it involves John the Baptist and a lot of people's perception of him. You remember he had a diet of locusts and wild honey. And those who observed that, why don't we start in verse 16 and read down a little ways. "But to what shall I compare this generation?" Jesus said. "It's like children sitting in a marketplace who call out to the other children, and they say, 'We played the flute for you and you didn't dance, and we sang a dirge and you did not mourn. For John came neither eating nor drinking,' and they say, 'He has a demon.'" I guess John had kind of more of an austere life. He was deprived himself of certain things that normal people would partake of. And they thought that was really strange, backwoods. And so they said, "He has a demon." And then the Son of Man, Jesus, verse 19, came eating and drinking. In other words, he had a more of a mainstream type thing. He ate and drank normal things like other people. And they say, "Behold, he's a gluttonous man and a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and sinners, and yet wisdom is vindicated by her deeds." So Jesus came and eating and drinking, and what did they say about him? he's a wine bibber and a glutton. Did he eat? Yes, but that didn't make him a glutton. Did he drink? Yes, but that didn't make him a wine bibber. They exaggerated things. They were loaded words. Why? Because they didn't like him. And if they liked him, they would have said, well, he eats and drinks like everybody else. We all do the same thing. But they use loaded words to discredit him. And Jesus is saying here, when children don't want to play, then nothing appeals to them. When people, you know, whether John came and he offered them one thing, they didn't want that. Jesus came and offered them something, they didn't want that. You know, when somebody doesn't love the truth, then it doesn't matter what kind of lifestyle that you have, they will not be pleased, and they'll find a way to change that to make you look bad. That's a way to slander people. Another way is when you use slightly changed words. Matthew chapter 26 is another example. When Jesus was arrested, and they were seeking some way to accuse him, and they couldn't find any. He was innocent, so they hired some false witnesses. And they came forward, and later, two came forward, it said, in verse 61, it says, this man stated, I am able to destroy the temple of God and to rebuild it in 3 days. Well, that's not exactly what he said. And if you look in John 2 and verse 19, he said, destroy this temple and I will rebuild it in 3 days. Point was, you destroy this body and I'll be back 3 days and I'll be raised from the dead. But they shifted it by slightly changing his words to make it seem like he was threatening to destroy the temple of God there in Jerusalem. That changes the picture entirely, doesn't it? And that sort of testimony led to his trial and death. And the same thing happened with Stephen. Just about the exact same accusation was made against him, and this young man who was preaching was also stoned to death because of misrepresentation of his words. And there's another example of slander. About words used differently than what somebody intended when they said them. Like in Luke chapter 23, another example of Jesus when he was being accused by the Jews. It says, the whole body of men arose and brought him before Pilate. And they began to accuse him and said, we found this man misleading our nation and forbidding to pay taxes to Caesar and saying that he himself is Christ, a king. Well, the first two are patently false. He didn't mislead the nation and he didn't forbid people to pay taxes. But the last one was more subtle. He said he was a king. He did say he was king, but he didn't mean it the way they made it sound. He meant he was a king as in the Messiah that was coming, but the king of another world, a spiritual king. But they made it to sound like he was saying he was a king like Caesar. In other words, he was a threat politically to the ruling authorities. And even Caesar, even Pilate, when he looked at the situation, he didn't see that was accurate. In fact, it says in verse 3, Pilate asked him and said, are you a king of the Jews? And he answered and he said, it is as you say. And Pilate said to the chief priests and multitudes, I find no guilt in it. But that wasn't what the chief priests and did. They changed the word. They used it differently, so that it would bear false witness against him, so that it would look as though he was saying something he wasn't. Another way people can slander, changing the words that we say. Jumping to conclusions can be a way of slandering someone. Look, if you would, in Acts chapter 21. Remember when Paul was arrested? We can jump to conclusions sometimes, and our conclusions may seem very justified. But when you report what seems to be the case, you may be reporting something that actually didn't happen. The Jews hated Paul because he preached that the Gentiles could be saved, he carried the gospel to the Gentiles. And he said that they could be saved simply by believing in Christ and obeying him. And in Acts chapter 21, verse 28, the Jews found Paul in the temple in Jerusalem. And they stirred up the multitudes against him. Let's look at verse 27. When the 7 days were almost over, the Jews from Asia upon seeing him in the temple, began to stir up all the multitudes and laid hands on him, crying out, "Men of Israel, come to our aid. This is the man who preaches to all men everywhere against our people and the law and this place. And besides this, he even brought Greeks into the temple and has defiled this holy place." So they said he brought a Greek into the temple. But look, if you would, in verse 29. "For they had previously seen Trophimus the Ephesian in the city with him, and they supposed that Paul had brought him into the temple. And all of the city was aroused, and they rushed together and took hold of Paul and threw him in jail." And if it hadn't been for a particular commander that was a little bit more investigative of the truth, he would have probably been killed. You know, it seemed to them it was probably true, but to report what was only probably true can often result in a false witness. So, you know, there's something that we need to practice. We need to say, when somebody reports something to us, we need to say, "Now let me understand, are you saying this? You know, did I get that right?" And repeat what they said. If you have to do it two or three times, but make sure that story is repeated, and that you're not leaving with some kind of supposed conclusion that they probably wouldn't really follow. And I think this may be another one that's closely tied to that, holding someone responsible for a conclusion that we've drawn. Look in Romans chapter 3, verse 5 and 8. When Paul was preaching, he would often preach that people are saved by grace. And that's true. And it seemed to the Jews that he was saying that if you're saved by grace, that would mean the more that you sin, the more grace that you're going to get. So it makes, you know, Paul is saying that we ought to sin more because that gives God a chance to pour out more grace and show more mercy to us, really demonstrate the righteousness of God. So in chapter 3 of Romans, he sort of addresses this abuse of what he had been saying. Verse 5, he said, "But if our unrighteousness demonstrates the righteousness of God, what shall we say? The God who inflicts wrath is not unrighteous, is he?" I'm speaking in human terms. And then if you drop down to verse 7 and 8, he says, "But if through my lie the truth of God abounded to his glory, why am I also being judged as a sinner? And why not say, as we are slanderously reported, and as some affirm that we say, let us do evil that good may come? Their condemnation is just." People are, again, listening to Paul say that we're saved by grace, that through our unrighteousness we're able, that God's righteousness is clearly seen. And people took that and said, "Well, Paul must be saying then, here's a conclusion that we can do." And it only stands to reason that Paul's saying that we ought to sin more because that gives God more chance to pour out his grace upon us. And Paul wasn't saying that. It was slander. And but, you know, it happens all the time. It happens a lot of times in religious discussions, especially in journals sometimes. You know, somebody takes a position that seems to us that it would require a certain conclusion, and so we accuse him of believing that conclusion. And that's slander. He doesn't believe it. Even though to us it would be the logical consequence of what he does believe. We need to talk to that person about that. Am I understanding you to say this? And now that doesn't mean that you think this, does it? Or would that lead us to believe that you think this? And let that person clear that up, rather than going to somebody else and saying, "He said that. That must mean he believes this." That's slander. Or another is judgment of motives. That can be slanderous too. Look in Galatians chapter 1:1. Paul was again saying that the Gentiles could be saved, and that he would say that they could be saved without keeping the law of Moses. It was not required to be a Christian. And there were some who was suggesting that his motive was that he would be popular. I mean, you know, he could please the Gentiles if he would say that. Oh, you know, well, those Gentiles, they really love Paul. I mean, they don't have to be circumcised. You know, they don't have to become a Jew. He's doing that because he's gaining a lot of their favor. And so that's Paul responds to that verse 10. He says, "For am I now seeking the favor of men or of God? Or am I striving to please men? If I were still trying to please men, I would not be a bondservant of Christ. That may be a logical conclusion. He's doing this in order to please others, but that's not what it really was. It wasn't his motive. They judged his motive falsely, and we can do that too. We may not intend to make up a false story, but we can leave the wrong impression. The reason they attributed such motives to Paul is because they didn't like him. So they use this false motive as a way to destroy his influence. And, you know, sometimes we can, so we have to be careful about judging motives, instead especially passing on those, our conclusions about those things. Also, it can be an unintentional slander. We don't have to do it intentionally. We may spread falsehoods just because we're ignorant of the truth. You know, we're ignorant of the real facts. You know, we need to, you know, I just heard what somebody else said. I start spreading it around, and I can do just as much harm as if I had initiated it to begin with. And we act like a club or a sword or an arrow, and we can ruin that person just by unintentionally saying things that they're not, when we're ignorant of the truth. And when we begin to spread a story or report something that we've heard, we need to ask the question, am I absolutely sure that I'm reporting what's true? And if I'm not absolutely sure, and if it just seems true, or it's probably true, or it would stand to reason that it's true, then I better keep quiet until I'm sure that it's accurate. Be careful. We can do things unintentionally, and it can ruin somebody else. Here's a poem by Mr. Anonymous. If I'm tempted to reveal a tale someone to me has told about another, let it pass before I speak, three gates of gold. Three narrow gates. First, is it true? Then, is it needful? And next, is it kind? And if to reach my lips, at last it passes through these gateways three, then I may tell my tale, nor fear what the result of speech may be. I'm going to think about that for just a minute. Number one, let's take these three gates of gold. Number one, is it true? Exodus chapter 23 and verse 1, the writer there, Moses, was trying to give Israel guidance in their lives, in the laws that God had given. And he said, you shall not bear a false report. Do not join your hand with a wicked man to be a malicious witness. Is it true? You know, he said, you better make sure it's true. So easy to do. You know, everybody's talking against somebody, and I may not know him, but if everybody is against him, then it's easy for me to report the things that are said without investigating to see whether they are true or not. Jump on the bandwagon. And he goes on to say, you shall not, verse 2, follow a multitude or follow a crowd in doing evil, and you shall not testify in a dispute so as to turn aside after a multitude in order to pervert justice. It's an easy thing to do. And when everybody in a group's discussing someone and I can come up with a little juicy tidbit to throw in there, you know, I can get in on it. Don't be guilty of that, he says. Be careful about that. So is it true? Is it needful? Is it needful to say things? Some things are absolutely true. There's no doubt about it. You know the facts. But the question is it going to do any good for me to repeat this about somebody? Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 29. Probably know that verse by heart. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 29 says, let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification, according to the need of the moment, that it may give grace to those who hear. You know, is it going to do any good for me to repeat this fact? Maybe true, absolutely. Wouldn't be false witness whatsoever. But it may make me look good too, you know, if I repeat it. Or it may make some other people a little bit more loyal to me if I say this. But is this the selfish purpose that I want to achieve by what I'm about to say? Is it going to help the person who may be guilty of something serious? Do you remember the thing that we talked about this morning in Matthew 18, verse 15, where he says, if your brother sins, go to him and reprove him, and if he repents, then you've gained your brother. Here's a way you keep it between those two people, and you resolve it, and nobody ever knows, just you and him. Can I go to the proper sources? If I have to go to someone else, can I go to the proper sources to help the person? And then maybe I have to do that. Maybe there comes a point where I have to do that. But we're seeking the benefit of the person, the edification, he says, the building up of that person. But if telling it's going to hurt the person, stir up trouble, contribute to the ruin of that person, then I shouldn't tell it. I need to give grace that is benefit to the hearer if I say it. And then lastly, is it kind? The question we need to ask, if he were the person who knew about me, what I knew about him, would I like him to take that and tell everybody else about it, or tell anybody else about it? Most of us, you know, would not want things told about us if they were hurtful. Most of us wouldn't want somebody to do that to us, whether it's true or false. You know, now in my right mind, if I'm guilty of something, I may want somebody to come and say something to me, and I may even need more than one person to come to me to convince me to change. And that, if I'm in my right mind, I'd want that to happen, so that I could make sure that I went to heaven and corrected those things. But many, many times things are told to bring, not to bring repentance, not to help the person, not to benefit that person, but to hurt them or for the person, or to gain some kind of personal advantage by saying it. Would I want someone to say about me if I were in this position? What would I want to do? Jesus said in Matthew chapter 7 and verse 12, therefore, however you want people to treat you, so treat them, for this is the law and the prophets. And I was looking at this passage here in Psalm 15, verses 1, 2, and 3. We'll talk about that in just a minute. Psalm chapter 15, verse 1, 2, and 3. O Lord, who may abide in thy tent? Who may dwell on thy holy hill? He who walks with integrity and works righteousness and speaks the truth in his heart. He does not slander with his tongue, nor does evil to his neighbor, nor takes up a reproach against his friend. The man who stands on God's holy hill would never take up a reproach against anybody. You know, it's refreshing to be with people who don't talk badly about others. That whenever you're with them, you know that you're not gonna, that's not going to be a problem. They're going to speak well about others. But that doesn't always happen. When people say things badly about other people, a lot of times it's because they don't like them. It's because they don't like them. It's amazing. I thought about this a little bit because of the discussions that go on because of the presidents in the election year. Anytime there's an election year, you know, if somebody discovers something in the president's favor, then, you know, their friends rejoice and they tell it because they want to build that person up. They want everybody to see how good he is, you know, and they want to promote him. But if something bad is discovered, his enemies will they'll jump on that, and they'll spread it, and use it as best they can to hurt him. You know, but the point is, people hear what they want to hear. A lot of times, they hear what they want to hear. And if you know your friends are the man, you want to hear good things. That's what you want to hear about somebody. And if you're an enemy of somebody, a lot of times you want to hear things that are bad about them. I think about how that can be. You know, if there's a person who's my friend and I hear a good report about him, I'm so pleased about that. I love it. In fact, I want to spread it. I want to tell somebody else. I remember Jason Moore talking about good gossip. You know, but I want to tell other people if I like them. And if I hear a bad report about him and I like that man, I will usually think, you know, I will never tell that to anybody about him, because why? I don't want him to be hurt. I don't want anything to happen to hurt him. I like him. I want to help him all I can to be respected and honored and have influence. And if I need to check that out with anybody, I'll go to him and talk to him about it. On the other hand, if I don't like somebody, then, you know, any little report that I hear, you know, it's kind of juicy. You know, I knew it. You know, I figured that about him. It doesn't surprise me, not at all. And I'm going to let other people know about it. You know, because it helps to destroy him. It's the way people think. And sometimes when we hear things bad about people, if we don't really like them that much anyway, we won't do a whole lot to investigate that to find out if there's real, if the truth is there. And we'll, you know, we kind of just let that slide. But if you like them, you'll, and somebody says something bad about them, you'll chase that down. You'll chase that down because you want to find out if that's accurate or not. And so, you know, the question is about love. You know, how do we feel about that person? A lot of times, 1 Corinthians 13 talks to us about qualities of love, and you know, it says it describes, you know, somewhat love rejoices not in unrighteousness. I mean, if we love a person, we will never find it pleasant to hear something told about him that we don't like or that he's doing something bad. It bears all things, hopes all things, endures all things. You know, if you love someone, you're going to believe the best about him and hope for the best and endure some things. But, you know, if you don't love him, you just can't stand it. And you hear it, you despise him, and you just love to hear good, nasty things about him. But, you know, not everybody tells tales out of ill will or just to hurt somebody. Not everybody does that. You know, some people are just tale bearers. Some just like to know everything about everybody. And so if a subject comes up, they're going to have something to say about it. I don't know if that's exactly the point of Proverbs 11 and verse 13, but it might be. Proverbs chapter 11 and verse 13, he writes a lot about the tongue because it's such a dangerous part of our bodies. But he says in chapter 11, verse 13, he who goes about as a talebearer reveals secrets, but he who is trustworthy conceals a matter. Talebearer likes to reveal secrets. It may not be bad. It may be good. But, you know, the person who likes to tell tales gets kind of a high out of knowing something that other people don't know. And that person's not trustworthy. He can't keep a confidence. If you tell him, you can expect that you'll hear it. It'll come back somewhere else because that person can't keep a confidence. They love to go around saying, now don't tell anybody. I heard this. And it's good, but don't tell anybody else. You know why? Because they like to tell them themselves. They like to be the ones who have the information. And if you tell it, they won't get the pleasure of being the owner of that information. Talebearers reveal secrets. If they're talebearers, don't tell them, or you're just asking for trouble. Or Proverbs chapter 26, verse 20 through 22. He says, for lack of wood, the fire goes out. And where there is no whisperer, contention quiets down. Like charcoal to hot embers and wood to fire, so is a contentious man to kindle strife. The words of a whisperer are like dainty morsels, and they go down into the innermost parts of the body. You know, if there's no wood, the fire goes out. Somebody wants to spread something, say something that's not good. If you don't take it any further, then you eliminate that fire from spreading just a little bit further. You just don't take it anywhere past what you've heard. And the words of a whisper are like dainty morsels. And they go down into the innermost parts. Sometimes you need to put the fire out, you know. Sometimes you need to have the courage to put the fire out right there when it starts. And that's a challenging thing to do, because the big challenge is when you're on the receiving side. And I've had people say, what do I do? You know, here's this person, and they're telling me, and I start feeling uncomfortable, and I don't know what to do. You know, I'm hearing this information, and I'm thinking, well, it didn't start bad at first, but it just doesn't seem like they ought to be saying this. And so what do you do? I know it's a very volatile thing. Because I know if you say, I don't think that we ought to be talking this way, depending on the nature of that person, you may become the enemy. And that's happened many times. But somehow that fire needs to be put out because somebody's going to get hurt. And it's better if that you take the risk and lovingly find a way to say to that person, I think we probably ought to change the subject. or, you know, that person really has some good things about them too. Find a way, kindly, to help that redirect that conversation to a positive thing, rather than allowing it to go on for the sake of that person's soul, and not for the sake, just to, don't protect them for your own safety. James chapter 3, we're going to close with this passage, James chapter 3. James chapter 3, verse 2 through 10. He says, "For we all stumble in many ways, and if anyone does not stumble in what he says, he is a perfect man, able to bridle his whole body as well. Now if we put the bits into the horse's mouth so that they may obey us, then we direct the entire body as well. Behold, the ships also, though they are so great and are driven by strong winds, are still directed by a very small rudder, wherever the inclination of the pilot desires. So also the tongue is a small part of the body, and yet it boasts of great things. Behold, how great a forest is set aflame by such a small fire. And the tongue is a fire, the very world of iniquity. The tongue is set among our members as that which defiles the entire body and sets on fire the course of our life and is set on fire by hell. For every species of beast and birds of reptiles and creatures of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by the human race, but no one can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil and full of deadly poison. With it we bless our Lord and our Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth come both blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not be this way. Does a fountain send out from the same opening both fresh and bitter water? Can a fig tree, my brethren, produce olives, or a vine produce figs? Neither can salt water produce fresh." And so he says, you know, fire is good. You know, it's profitable. And we enjoyed it the last few months as it kept us warm, and we're going to enjoy the, you know, nice warmth of the sun in the next few months. But it can be destructive. Fire can be destructive. And water, you know, what a blessing. Quenches thirst, cools, refreshes us in the middle of the heat. Farmers love it now. We need it. Can't live without it. But water can be destructive too. And so it is with the tongue. And so when we hear a sermon like this, you know, we shouldn't leave thinking, I'm not going to ever say another word. Just can't say anything that it doesn't cause some kind of trouble. That's not the point. But we should be put on guard with what we say, guarding our tongue. And we need to control it, and so that God can use it to bless other people. You know, the most beneficial use of the tongue that can possibly be made is to say before men that Jesus is the Christ, before people who are unbelievers. However you go about it is to confess the name of the Lord and tell people about Him. That's the most wonderful use of the tongue. Paul called it the good confession. Not just spoken. Not just some thing that we say in front of the congregation and then that's all the last time. But it's a life. It's a way of practice throughout our life. And the way we talk and the way we communicate, the way we behave ourselves before the world. Have you made that good confession? This would be a good time to do that if you are wanting to become a Christian. And we would invite you to take advantage of this opportunity while we stand and sing our song.